Hello and welcome to Written in Uncertainty, an Elder Scrolls podcast sat firmly in the grey maybe of Tamriel, and proud member of the Robots Radio Podcast Network. My name is Arimithius, and this week we're carrying on our look at the monomyth with an examination of the Yokuden creation myth entitled Satakal the World Skin. It's a little different from some of the other creation myths that we've seen to date. The entities have very different names and take on very different roles. There's quite a few different themes going on here that we don't have elsewhere that I'd like to draw out as we go through. And also, it's told quite differently as well. While the Anuad is supposedly a children's story, this feels quite childlike. It's got very, very simple terms and emotional terms in how it describes what the spirits are doing, which is, I think, a really interesting take. But anyway, so we get started with the book. Satak was first serpent, the snake who came before, and all the worlds to come rested in the glimmer of its scales. But it was so big that there was nothing but, and thus it was coiled around itself, and the worlds to come slid across each other, but none had room to breathe, or even be. I'd like to stop and pause there for a second to think about what all that might mean. This is a world where there is everything already. It's all there. There's just pure existence, nothing else going on. And if you have pure existence, nothing can change, nothing can be in a meaningful sense, because if it is always there, and it's always this thing, and on and on and on, then have you got any meaningful way of differentiating between things and knowing what they are? It's a bit like sensory overload in the way I think about it, because it's just so much stuff that you don't really know where to start. You're just being bombarded with everything from the cosmos all at once, undifferentiated, so it's just this one thing, which is Satak, but it means that you can't have anything but Satak. And so the worlds called to something to save them, to let them out. But of course there was nothing outside the first serpent, so aid had to come from inside it. This was Akel, the hungry stomach. Akel made itself known, and Satak could only think about what it was. And it was the best hunger, so it ate and ate. This is a very different set of events from what we know of in other myths and legends about how the Arabis came to be. There isn't even an Arabis at this point. Are we to think that Satak is the Arabis itself? That feels like it's the most satisfying answer to me at the moment, but it's not complete yet, and it's a direct contradiction of what we know of from other myths, where there is at least the void, there is at least that comparison between being and nothingness, between the Arabis and the stuff outside the Arabis. This has a difference to that, in that the difference is coming from within. You're getting the solution from within Satak. And so it's becoming a self-generating thing, it's becoming self-determining in some way. Soon there was enough room to live in the worlds, and things began. These things were new, and they often made mistakes, for there was hardly any time to practice being things before. So most things ended quickly, or were not good and gave up on themselves. Now this feels to me like there's been some sort of experimentation going on. There's been possible worlds that have tried to be and not been, and worlds that have lasted for a time, some events have happened, and that sort of thing. Trying to find a stable solution, if you like, and a way to carry on being, which is, again, slightly different from what we see when the other myths will talk about the Aedra and the Daedra in this kind of timeless space that the Mirish races, at least, will think about as paradise as such. It's, well, not really paradise, but as a good place to be, as something to go back to. Whereas this primal state is one of experimentation and mucking up and being a child, which kind of gives us some reason for the language here. It's described in quite simple terms because what's going on is simple, because the worlds are having to learn how to be, and the beings in the universe are having to learn how to be. Some things were about to start, but they were eaten up as Satak got to that part of its body. This was a violent time. And this kind of reminds me of bits of the Argonian creation myth. There's quite a few parallels between the Children of the Root and this particular story. There's talk about times of violence and blood and sap in that particular myth, when the Etarda fight, or various things that are, I'm assuming the Etarda will start to fight and try and assert their will on things, and it gets quite messy. Pretty soon, Akel caused Satak to bite its own heart, and that was the end. The hunger, though, refused to stop, even in death, and so the first serpent shed its skin to begin anew. And I think this is possibly the first Kalpa, or at least some form of subgradation. And again, we've got more parallels with the Argonian myth here, that the dead skin and the act of dying and being reborn is a creative force in this myth, in how it considers the world to work. And you've got the idea of skins being shed, and pretty soon we'll hit the concept of world skins, but I just wanted to prime you with that thought for now, that in shedding those skins, it begins new cycles, keeps things going through particular motions of creation and destruction, which in various other places in the Elder Scrolls lore are talked about as the Kalpic cycle. As the old world died, Satakar began, and when things realised this pattern, so did they realise what their part in it was. They began to take names, like Ruptka or Tuwaka, and then strode about looking for their skin. As Satakal ate itself over and over, the strongest spirits learned to bypass the cycle by moving at strange angles. They called this process the walkabout, a way of striding between the world skins. And that's a full expression of the Kalpic cycle that I just mentioned. It's the process of the world being birthed with the shedding of the old skin and the beginning of the new, which is then shed again in turn, in order to create the next thing. And the Redguards are one of the only cultures to really pick up on this cycle, which is kind of interesting because it has implications for where the Redguards come from. Some people within the fandom will say that the Redguards came from a previous Kalpa. If that's the case, then it makes sense for them to know what Kalpas are and how they work in a way that isn't necessarily true of other races. We also see a thing in here called the walkabout, which is a way of going through and between the world skins, way of surviving beyond the world skins. That's potentially linked to a thing called the walking ways. The words sound very similar. And the walking ways are referenced by Vivek in the 36 lessons, and they are potentially ways of attaining some sort of power or godhood. And potentially, if this Redguard myth is the case, it's a way of surviving beyond the Kalpic cycle, or at least going back to the time before, in some sense. You see in, I think it's Vex teaching, that the Sijik Endeavor and Chim are a return to the first brush of Anu Padme, is the words that's used. So it's again that sense of going back to what was before. There is one difference here that I'd like to highlight, though. It's not really mentioned that Satakal becomes anything else after this point. We had Satak having his initial death after biting his heart and becoming Satakal, but Satakal then becomes a self-perpetuating cycle. It's a little strange. I don't really know what to make of it, but it could potentially be something like Anuiel becoming a thing that exists between Kalpas, whereas Anu is a thing that happens before Kalpas in the previous narratives. It could be that something similar to that is going on here. It's just that the naming conventions are similar enough that it made me think is that what's going on? But also distinct enough, and the stories are distinct enough, that I'm not really sure. Ruptger was so big that he was able to place the stars in the sky so the weaker spirits might find their way easier. This practice became so easy for the spirits that it became a place called the Far Shores, a time of waiting until the next skin. This passage is interesting because it messes with our particular understanding of cosmology. The placing of the stars in the sky isn't something that's described elsewhere. The stars are generally what happens when various Etarda try to flee Mundus after having made the mistake of going into the deal with Lorcan and then thinking, oh, I'd better run away before I die. But in this narrative, they are placed there by someone who's planned out how all this is going to work. And it's a way of getting away. The escape is the same, that theme's still there. But it's not considered an ideal in other myths. And it's certainly not something that other races seem to try and aspire to. Whereas in Redguard religion, you've got the idea that going back to the Far Shores is something that mortals should be able to attain, something that mortals should be able to do. And that in this is because of the stars. If we're to think that the stars are at least similar to how they are in other myths, then it means emulation, it means imitation in a way that's quite similar to how the Ultmer are supposed to do it. When we get to the Ultmer creation myth, you'll see that Auriel ascended in full view of everyone and showed them how to do it. That parallel here is quite interesting, although even with Auriel, it's not linked to the stars in the same way. And finally, before we move on to the next bit, the Far Shores are considered a time of waiting until the next skin. If the world skins are Kalpas, does that mean that the Far Shores, which incidentally we visit in the Elder Scrolls Online and is part of Aetherius, is between Kalpas? Does that mean that Aetherius is a realm that is entirely distinct from the cycles of creation and destruction in the world? Part of me wants to say yes, because it's a place that's unaffected by the creation of Mundus, but it's also supposedly the place where the Divines are in most faiths. And the Divines, the Etarda, are those gods that give them part of themselves up to make Mundus. So have they existed within Aetherius as another version of themselves that never made that? I'm not sure, but it's a contradiction, I think, within the lore that we don't really know enough about to give a solid answer to. Ruptger was able to sire many children through the cycles, and so he became known as the Tall Pupper. He continued to place stars to map out the void for others, but after so many cycles, there were almost too many spirits to help out. And this seems to imply that we've got different gods in each cycle, different gods in each Kalpa. Firstly, it serves the sense of showing that the Red Guards have an awful lot of gods. There's a god of too many gods, if you listen to some texts, and various other gods that are just entirely incidental and not really relevant to what's going on, but they just are. And quite how this works in terms of reconciling it with other faiths, where you have constant figures who are always what they are, is a little difficult for me to wrap my head around. But it could also be that if these are Kalpas that we're looking at, we do have some evidence that the Etarda have different roles between Kalpas or in different Kalpas. So is the expression about creating new gods just a way of thinking about, well, this person was, say, a god of death in the previous Kalpa, now he's a god of harvest. Oh, they must be different people. You can't be a god of death and a god of harvest at once. That might be some way of doing it, but I don't know for sure. He made himself a helper from the detritus of past skins, and this was Sep, or Second Serpent. Sep had much of the hungry stomach still left in him, multiple hungers from multiple skins. And this is where we get a very definite analogue. We've not been quite sure exactly who the various equivalents are until this point, but Sep is very definitely the Redguard version of Lorkhan. He's the one that starts to create the world, we'll see in a bit, and he's also in some way secondary or related to the first god. I'm hesitant to say that Ruptgar is the same as Akatosh or Magnus or something like that. There's none of his abilities that really map onto either of those, but he is something that is primary to Lorkhan being secondary. Something else to consider here is the role of the Helper. I think it's quite interesting that we ultimately see a change in how the Red Guards see their helpers and the god who is primarily rooting for them. The god of the mortals, Tuwaka, is the one who guides the Red Guards to the far shores. So there's obviously been some sort of replacement that's gone on here, and we'll see precisely what that is a little further down in this passage. But we've got a better helper in Tuwaka is the idea, I think. Someone who actually knows how to get to back to the far shore and isn't subject to the flaws that Sep is. And we've also got an interesting first flag here that Sep is made from the detritus of past skins. Now, Sep goes on to create the world from a ball of disused skin. It's possible that he's basically only doing what he knows in this narrative. He was created from a past skin, and so obviously that's what you do. You take old skins and you make new stuff. It's entirely understandable that Sep does what he does, because that's what he came from. He was so hungry that he could not think straight. Sometimes he would just eat the spirits he was supposed to help, but Tall Papa would always reach in and take them back out. Finally, tired of helping Tall Papa, Sep went and gathered the rest of the old skins and balled them up, tricking spirits to help him, promising them that this was how you reach the new world, by making one out of the old. This is possibly where we get another direct link to Lorkhan. We've obviously got the creation of the world happening here, and particularly taking what's gone before and making it into something new, which we also see in the Anuad. Anu takes the remnants of the 12 worlds and smashes them together to make Nirn. But I think there's also some link to what Lorkhan is up to, that Lorkhan has a plan and a reason for doing what he does to push people beyond what's gone before. And this narrative reinforces that Sep is making something that hasn't come before, although the Red Guards do have a very negative attitude to that particular action. It's not something that fits in with their nice neat cycles of creation and rebirth and death and rebirth that you've got in the normal cycle of the world, so to speak. These spirits loved this way of living, as it was easier. No more jumping from place to place. More spirits joined in, believing this was good thinking. Tall Papa just shook his head. Pretty soon, the spirits on the skin ball started to die, because they were very far from the real world of Sutakal. And they found it was too far to jump back to the far shores now. This is interesting thematically to me, because it says to me that people have decided to take part in something that's not alive, not something that's real, but something that is fake, something that is dead. And so in taking part in something that is dead, you are killing yourself. That's what the spirits are doing here. They are becoming mortal through their choices, which ties in a very allegorical way to the other creation myths from the Elder Scrolls, but it also links to various real world myths and how tales like Persephone link to once you've tasted the fruit of the underworld, you can't go back. That sort of theme, I think, is what's going on here. And it's also a link to the process of subgradation. in the, or subgradients rather, within the earlier parts of the monomyth, you see people making souls for themselves so that they can understand, and they birth their own souls, who then birth souls in turn. And you've got that gradual progression from Anu to Anuiel to Auriel, and then from Padme to Sithis to Lorcan. That kind of progression and descent, you can't go back. You can't say that Lorcan will now become Sithis again, and because he can take some various other bits and make himself Sithis again. That is what this passage is saying. It's a roundabout way of describing that process. And it also means that they can't get back to Aetherius, that you've got some spirits trapped and not able to get back to the far shores and back to the timeless time, the place where you can always exist and carry on going. The spirits that were left pleaded with Tall Papa to take them back, but Grim Ruptger would not, and he told the spirits that they must learn new ways to follow the stars to the far shores now. If they could not, they must live on through their children, which was not the same as before. I think this is very much as called a kind of paradise lost through transformation, a paradise lost through choices. It almost feels like a more direct parallel to the Garden of Eden in a way that we don't see in other Tamrielic creation myths. It's that you are now here, you have made your choice to be here, and you are not allowed back. The other myths portray this as a process rather than a choice. We've got Ruptger here saying you're not allowed back, and if he would change his mind, then they might be able to be let back, which is quite a different perspective. And I think this is also potentially where we start to see the distinction between gods and mortals coming in, and potentially, although this is me reaching a bit, the beginning of the thoughts of clean and unclean things that we see in Redguard culture as a whole. Things that are linked to Sep, to death, are things that will poison people in a way that will stop them from being able to reach the far shores because they are linked to death, in the same way that the spirits were linked to death through being on the skin ball that is Mundus. Sep, however, needed more punishment, and so Tall Papa squashed the snake with a big stick. This has been the subject of some speculation that I've seen throughout the community as to precisely what the big stick is. It's possible that it's the secret tower of Vivek's talk in the 36 lessons, but I'm not totally sure. It's the same sort of shape, it's just a rod, but it's not necessarily something that's a punishment for Lorcan in the case of the tower. That you think about Lorcan is the one to have seen the tower and to have gained an understanding through that, not to have been punished by being hit with a stick. So I'm not sure what to make of that one. The hunger fell out of Sep's dead mouth and was the only thing left of the second serpent. While the rest of the new world was allowed to strive back to godhood, Sep could only slink around in a dead skin or swim about in the sky, a hungry void that jealously tried to eat the stars. And we get an awful lot of Lorcan parallels here. The hunger falling out of Sep's dead mouth makes me think of how Lorcan's divine spark was torn from him at convention and then flung to Mundus. I don't think we have any indication in Redguard myths that the hunger was something that was then imbued into the world, but the parallel strikes me as a bit too much to pass up. And you've also got talk about the rest of the new world being allowed to strive back to godhood. That's being allowed to look for the walkabout and the walking ways and being allowed to transcend Mundus in whatever way possible. But Sep can only wander around in a dead skin and swim about in the sky. The walking about in a dead skin is something that we see in particularly the Khajiiti myth. In the Khajiiti myth, Lorcaj is punished and made to walk Nirn for many phases, and that feels similar to what's going on here, that Sep can slink around in a dead skin, can be immortal, can do all this, that, and the other, but can't do anything else. And swimming about in the sky is a nod to the serpent constellation. The serpent constellation, according to the book The Firmament, is a collection of stars that aren't stars. They are called unstars, pretty much. And they are a collection of things that attack the other constellations. The guardian constellations guard their charges against the serpent. And you're seeing that that's now being given narrative weight. Sep is the serpent constellation, and so Lorcan is the unstars that is the serpent constellation. And that was a fairly short one, but a very different perspective and filled with quite a lot more in the terms of normative input as to how the world should be than we see in other creation myths. Thank you ever so much for joining me in my look through Svartakal the World Skin. It's been really interesting to look at something that's markedly different from what we already know and love about Tamriel. If you have enjoyed this show, please do consider subscribing to it wherever you listen and leaving a review. Or check out some of the other shows on the radio there. Or if you want to support the show in a more personal way, head over to my Patreon at patreon.com/writteninuncertainty. Patrons get exclusive access to all of the notes I make for all of the content that I produce and access to it a few days early. Or if you just want to leave me a quick tip, head over to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/Arimathias, and leave a tip in the jar. And you can also head over and check out some of the other Robots Radio podcasts that are out there. There's Hidden Pixels, which looks at the untold stories of the games that you already love. And there's the Isles of the Vault podcast, which looks at the lore of Fallout. There's the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, which has some of the grounding in the basics of the lore and looking over some of the more key entities at a simpler stage in the understanding of the lore, and as well as the Fallout Lorecast, which gives a very similar treatment to the Fallout universe. Thank you once again for joining me. Next time on the main Written in Uncertainty podcast, we will be asking the question, who is Vivek? I say next time rather than next week because I'm in the process of moving at the moment and there are boxes and packing materials and everything and everywhere, and I need to put some more time into actually getting things sorted out. So I will be producing things at a slower rate than normal. I'm sorry about that. The next close reads that we do will be the next stage along the monomyth, which is the Cyrodiilic monomyth, called Shazar's Song, which will be the week after the Vivek podcast. Thanks ever so much for your time, and until we meet again, this podcast remains a letter written in uncertainty. You've been listening to Written in Uncertainty, an Elder Scrolls podcast written and presented by Arimathias and a proud member of the Robots Radio Podcast Network. The music for this podcast has been kindly provided by Jan Glembotsky and Jeremy Saul. Check out Jan's work at SoundCloud under Songs from the Lost Land, and Jeremy's Northerner Diaries is available for purchase and on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Hey friends, this is Robots, the creator of the Robots Radio Podcast Network and host of the two original shows on the network, the Fallout Lorecast and the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. These two shows have rocketed up the iTunes charts. They both together have over 155 star reviews in only a couple of months, with bite-sized episodes that take you step by step through the background of the games and the game worlds. They're thought-provoking, well-produced, and a lot of fun. I recommend you go check them out at robotsradio.net or on any podcast, reader, podcatcher, whatever you use, iTunes, Spotify. Again, that's the Fallout Lorecast and the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, available everywhere.